Welcome.
Well, once again, everybody, thank you for joining me here on this Monday, August 29th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We've got a lot of college football coverage coming your way here, both today and throughout the week here on Bang the Book Radio. Of course, offense to Cal and Hawaii, but the season really starts on Thursday night. We've got seven games coming up there, handful of games on Friday, and then a blockbuster Saturday for college football. A lot of premier matchups, the best opening weekend we've ever had. So we'll definitely have you ready for all that here with this week's version of Bang the Book, or this week's episodes of Bang the Book Radio. On today's show, I'll be joined by Aaron Saunders at Saunders Sports on Twitter, member of bangthebook.com, also of numberfire.com. We'll break down the Pac-12 conference here. Of course, Cal has already played. We'll discuss that a little bit. And then hopefully in the second half of today's show, I'll be joined by Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com. We'll see what happens. His wife could go into labor at any time here, so we'll see what happens with that. But hopefully we can get Kyle in, get his segment done, and then get him on out of here for the birth of his second child. We'll go ahead and bring in today's first guest. That is Mr. Aaron Saunders of Bang the Book, also of numberfire.com. Aaron, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam, doing well. Thanks for having me back on. Cannot wait for Thursday, the start of games, and it should be just a phenomenal weekend right on through Monday.
Yeah, it definitely should. And you and I were exchanging some banter for that Cal-Hawaii game, and if any of our listeners had been privy to some of that commentary, I'm sure that they would have enjoyed that thoroughly. But we got a lot of Pac-12 stuff to cover here. Of course, we'll talk about your season win total best bet over, season win total best bet under, your pick for the champion, which in my mind is pretty surprising. I think you've taken a very strong stance on this team. Then we'll talk about a few other teams here in the conference. But I guess we'll go ahead and we'll kind of save that really strong stance for a minute here. Talk more about your under best bet here this week. Kind of flipped the script a little bit. I thought that this one was interesting as well, particularly coming off the success that they had last year, and that's Washington State.
Yeah, Washington State's a team that made a pretty good leap under Mike Leach last year. They're a team that I have been on in the past with not such great results. But this is a team where I think the metrics, I think, tell an interesting story. They really weren't, according to the metrics, a 9-win team. In fact, a lot of the Bill Connolly analysis and other folks that do the numbers-based work, really rate this team more of like a top 50 team than, say, a top 30 team. They got lucky. They in the turnover category, they won a lot of close games, won possession games. And so a team like that, I generally pump the brakes on. I mean, progression is not linear, to still another Bill Connollyism. And so I just don't think there's an automatic assumption of this team getting better. I also feel like the gains that they made on the defensive side of the ball will be tough to repeat this year because they're replacing so much in the front seven, and they had such a small rotation. We don't really know a lot about the guys who are going to step in. So this is a team that I know people like to get excited about because of the offense, but they look like a 6-6 team to me, more than a 9-3 or an 8-4 team.
Season win total for the Cougars right now, if you head over to Five Dimes, over 7 minus 150, under 7.5 minus 135. So obviously people sort of looking at this as a team that could go 7-5. And, from a schedule standpoint, they get Eastern Washington and Idaho at home in the non-conference. They should win both of those. They've got to go to Boise State next week, which I think is a very interesting spot for both teams. But in terms of, looking at the metrics here, and I'm kind of going to bring this back to a baseball analogy a little bit here. The advanced statistics, when you look at extreme fly ball pitchers, stats like FIP and XFIP never really look all that favorably on guys like that because they have, such an extreme batted ball distribution. So they can carry a low ERA because fly balls don't go for hits as often as ground balls. Similarly, a fly ball pitcher will give up more home runs because he's allowing more fly balls. So is this just a case where with Washington State, they're so one-dimensional on offense that the metrics, kind of look down on that lack of balance?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I also just think they're just such a unique team, even on offense, that they're really hard to sort of get a handle on. I mean, from an efficiency standpoint, they're tremendous. But the problem is that they don't have a lot of explosiveness. They don't have a lot of big play capability. I mean, Falk really has done a tremendous job in terms of staying ahead of the chains and getting first downs and not being in situations where they have to make big plays. But I think that obviously with the fast-paced offense, that puts a lot more pressure on the defense. And I think what you saw last year was the defense play a little bit better. But if you look at the longer-term efficiency trends, I just can't imagine this team repeating it. But from an offensive standpoint, they're just a juggernaut from an efficiency standpoint. But I think that just goes to show you that even as efficient as an effective as this offense is, the defense really does drag them down, and I think keeps that overall rating suppressed. You know, two of the other factors I think that are important here with respect to, you know, their projection coming into the season is, you know, two of the key considerations are what I call sustained success, which is, you know, efficiency over a longer period of time. Say I look at 5 years as well as, you know, other folks that looked at advanced statistics, and recruiting. And both of those two categories, this team is not very good. They recruited about a top 60 level, and their five-year S&P Plus is in the 80s. So I just – this is a team that I'm just much more reserved on. Again, they tend to defy some of the statistics. If you're looking at just raw yardage, they look very impressive. But I just don't think the defense can do it consistently enough to keep this team competitive week in and week out.
Well, that's a big thing is the recruiting. I mean, when you talk about trying to recruit people to Pullman, it's kind of tough to do. You know, any of the good players in the Pacific Northwest, obviously their first choice would be Oregon if they can get there. You know, Boise State is a program that recruits very well. And, of course, in the Northwest, you've got the opportunity to go to some of the Cal schools and then Washington as well. So I can see why the metrics would be down on the Cougars a little bit because it is difficult to recruit. Now, at the same time, though, you know, I mean, with this Mike Leach system, which is very different, of course, very different from what Paul Wolf was doing previously, do you feel like the, you know, rating level of these recruits matters as much? Because this really is a system offense where, particularly if you're a wide receiver or quarterback, you can put up numbers even if you're not a highly touted guy.
Well, you know, it's a good point. I mean, I think that where the recruiting ranks matter for me is more on the defensive side. I think that on the offensive side, the system is the system, and I think that you could get a lot of production out of guys who maybe don't have the blazing speed because they are so efficient. But I think on the defensive side is where it creates problems. And I think we saw that last year with how thin the rotation was for Mike Leach. You know, if you look at a team like UCLA that had so many injuries, they were bringing in freshmen and sophomore who are 4- and 5-star guys, and now all those guys have another year of experience. When you're really thin, you know, on the defense, you're not rotating in four- and five-star guys. You're forced to rely on 3- and 2-stars. So you lose a bunch of guys like Washington State did it in the front seven this year, and you don't have a lot of big names who have the talent or the experience really to step in. So I think that that's, for me, where the recruiting rankings matter more for this team. I do think you make a good point on the offensive side of the ball that it's a little bit more plug and play, not so much on the defense, which really matters in this conference with a lot of the very, very talented offenses that we see, you know, USC, UCLA, et cetera.
One of the last things I'll ask you about here, and then we'll move on to your big, bold call and your over team and also your likely conference champion is, for Washington State last year, we haven't done this a whole lot when we've been doing these previews. We've mostly been looking at an overview, more of a season win total angle. But the Cougars last year, of course, they went 9-4 straight up, but they were 10-3 against the number, 8-1 against the spread in conference. So is this a team that you're not only selling long-term, but also looking to sell, you know, on a week-by-week basis as we head into the year?
Well, you know, I do think that they're going to come in overrated, and I think early in the year there may be some value playing against Washington State, but of course, you know, as you mentioned, their non-conference schedule outside of that Boise State game is not that great. It's not like I'm going to be in a big hurry to back, you know, Idaho or Eastern Washington, but I do think there may be some value on Boise State in that game. I know I've heard some national commentators talk about Washington State being able to go in and winning that game on the Smurf turf, and so I think that there may be some wrong numbers on Washington State going into the year. We'll see what happens. I mean, I don't like to overcorrect my power ratings too much in September, but if they come out a little sluggish out of the gate, you know, the value that could potentially be on Washington State being overvalued in the market may quickly vanish.
All right. Well, I think this is fascinating. I'm going to love the discussion we have here on this team. That's the Oregon Ducks. Season win total at 5 dimes right now. 8.5, the under minus 135, over 8 minus 148. So we're seeing it looks like a team that's probably going to go an 8-4, 9-4 type of thing here, or 9-3 type of thing here, at least according to the people that are betting on this season win total. But you've got very, very high hopes for the Oregon Ducks this year.
I do. It's, a lot of guys in the media, they get rewarded for making these bold calls and going out on a limb, right? Because they're trafficking in clicks, and that's not really what I like to do. I like to offer solid analysis. I'm not really much of a hot take artist, but the more I really read about the Pac-12 and the more I dug into Oregon, the more I really like this team. And I do think that there may be some value from a futures perspective in taking your favorite Pac-12 team and getting some odds on them going to the college football playoff, because it seems to be, whether it's pundits or the metrics experts, there seems to be a common assumption that the Pac-12 just isn't going to put a team into the playoff. And I understand there's a lot of parity, but that's also true of the SEC, and we certainly don't have any problem putting Alabama or LSU in the playoff discussion. So I automatically come into the conference thinking that if you really like a team, picking them to go to the playoff, there may be some value. And the more I looked at the schedule, the more I looked at what was returning, and the more I looked at what other teams would be struggling with, particularly UCLA and Stanford, the more I like the Oregon Ducks. So that they are going to be my pick to not just get easily over that total of 8.5 wins for the year, but I like them to win the North, and I like them to win the Pac-12. And I think a lot of that has to do with year-to-year efficiency over time. Remember, last year was considered a disappointment. FPI had them 19th in the country in efficiency. This is a team that does it year in and year out, and their talent rankings are obviously top 20 as well. So I like a lot of the pieces and the parts, and most importantly, they address the defensive side of the ball with bringing in Brady Hoke. We'll see if he has all the talent from year one. But if you look across the board at the Pac-12, I think there's no team that could make a better case to win the conference than Oregon.
I think Oregon's a fascinating team on a lot of levels, because I think that there are a lot of questions and a lot of storylines going into the season with this team. And I won't argue with you about the year after year efficiency. I won't argue with you about sustained success. This is a program that's won at least 10 games every year since 2008, with the exception of last year. And that's where my point of contention is with Oregon here. They bring in Dakota Prukop. We'll see what he does as a starting quarterback. But my bone to pick is with Mark Helfrich. And you can talk about bringing in great recruits, and obviously there's something to be said about bringing in talent year after year and being able to reload. But I think one of the hardest things to do in college as a head coach is to maximize the great talent that you have. It seems like Helfrich over his first 2 years probably able to do that 24-4. Last year, just 9-4. They had some coach shifting going on in the defensive side of the ball, probably part of the. But that's the big thing for me. Helfrich is the question mark. I don't question the talent, and I know that the offense will be good, but I do question Mark Helfrich, and that's my issue here.
Well, just to take a little bit of a contrarian view, and I do, by the way, I don't think that Mark Helfrich is a top 10 coach in the country like we saw with Chip Kelly. But I think that, if we're really – I just feel like Oregon is the biggest victim of recency bias of maybe all 128 teams in the FBS. They actually put a hell of a run together at the end of last year. And if they end up putting a second half together against TCU, this team finishes on a pretty dramatic run, and they're a top – they finish the year ranked in the top 15. I think that where Oregon suffered last year was when Vernon Adams went out. They were just a totally different team. He was out when they got crushed by Utah. So I think that there were some circumstances that were working against Oregon, and I think that folks have been quick to forget because of that bowl game just how good this team was down the stretch. Remember that they beat a very good Stanford team. They boat raced USC late in the year. And so I think Oregon really put it together, and I think this team sort of clicked. I think that maybe there's just a little bit being too much emphasis put on the Utah game that they lost and the way they lost the bowl game. Again, not a big believer in Helfrich, but I think he's a good enough coach to get this team to double-digit wins again this year.
Well, and then there's everyone's flavor of the year team in Washington. Oregon went on the road and beat Washington last year. And I know people are going to say, well, Washington was a year away. Yeah, maybe so. But, I mean, this is an Oregon team that lost at home to Washington State the week before. then went out and beat Washington on the road in a tough place to play. So we did see it from Oregon at the end of the year, and as you mentioned, I mean, that bowl game collapse was one of the most epic that we've ever seen. Also, they bring in Brady Hoke to run the defense, and I don't think anything of Brady Hoke as a head coach, and obviously there's, you know, a decent amount of evidence for that, particularly in the Power Five. But as a defensive coordinator, this is a guy that should make a mark on this team. Now, he was quoted last week as saying that they have a long way to go to be an actual defense. I'm paraphrasing that a little bit. So, you know, there are some worries about the Ducks on defense early on. But when you play UC Davis and Virginia coming out of the chute, you've got time to work on some things.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I do think that the game at Nebraska in the third week of the season is going to show us a lot. But I do have faith in Brady Hoke. I mean, even though he hasn't had the defensive coordinator title over the last, you know, I guess decade plus, the guy has had unquestioned success in all of his stops. And I think that, you know, certainly where I think the defense, the experience matters most is in the secondary, particularly in this particular conference. And so I think that what Oregon brings back is encouraging. I do have some faith in Brady Hoke in turning this around. And I think just getting Don Pelham out of that position was a step in the right direction. I know the guy's a good recruiter. He's apparently a great linebackers coach. But that's an automatic upgrade. I mean, I also think that, you know, later they get some of their most difficult games later in the year when they have, you know, in November they're at USC, they get Stanford at home, and then they have, you know, Utah on the road, which Utah can be a tricky place to play. So there is, I think that there is time for this team to come together. And I think that some of their toughest challenges are later in the year. And again, I think that with Prukop coming in the quarterback, I think that offense will be clicking. And I've got, you know, some hope that this Brady Hoke regime can get the most out of some of these very talented players in the defense. I think they're going to be better this year. And I think the schedule sets up well for them, getting Washington and Stanford both at home.
And they avoid UCLA as well, so that's something that certainly could help the Ducks this season. Before we get into some of these wild card teams, and of course there are a ton of them here in the Pac-12, I want to ask you a little bit, you know, what we've done here is we've kind of done a metrics versus magazines type of angle here with these, you know, season win total previews and conference previews, and, you know, a lot of analysis goes into this, a lot of looking back at what's happened last year, over the last 3 years, over the last 5 years, that type of thing. But I want to ask you about, you know, in the present here. And we got to see Cal last week in Australia against Hawaii. Cal, 51-31 win, did not cover the spread as long as you got Hawaii at, you know, 20 and a half or higher. But with these games that have recently happened, you know, I know that we've talked a lot about analysis that you've had a long time to study. How are you grading these teams, you know, as these games are going on or after the fact when you start looking back at what's gone on?
Well, I'm not moving my power ratings that much, you know, in these first couple of games. It's certainly true of the Cal game. I mean, in a lot of ways, I sort of chucked that game out. I mean, I don't think we're going to learn a lot about Cal by playing Hawaii, particularly in the bizarre venue and the circumstances and how early in the season that game was. But I tend to be pretty conservative in moving my numbers early on. I mean, obviously injuries and players leaving the program, you need to do that in August. But I'm not going to overreact too much that I see in September, particularly if teams are losing late in the game and one possession games. I mean, those things tend to be so fluky. So I'm probably one of the more conservative handicappers in terms of overreacting to what we see in September. I do think we're going to learn certain things about teams, but I'm not ready to move a team too far up or too far down based on, you know, a new quarterback not looking so great. So I'm going to come at things pretty conservatively in the month of September.
The one thing that I did take away from that game, I took a couple of things away. For one thing, Hawaii is absolutely awful. That was one thing I took away from that game. The other thing I took away from it was, you know, Jake Spavital, his play calling in that game was kind of interesting to me. It seemed like Cal was sort of working backwards at times offensively. I mean, you know, they still threw the ball 54 times and ran the ball 35 times. They ran a ton of plays in this game. But I was really surprised with how much running up the middle they did with this bear raid offense. I mean, they had three different backs carry the ball 10 times or more in this game. And that was something that kind of stood out to me a little bit. Now, you know, early in the year, you want to achieve offensive balance, all these types of things, but Spavital with this, you know, this bear raid offense, I kind of wonder if there's going to be some continuity issues down the line a little bit. Again, you don't want to read too much into one game, but I thought that Cal's play calling was kind of suspect at times.
Yeah, and I think that I maybe gave Cal a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because I almost looked at this like an NFL preseason game where I thought, boy, are we really seeing the full playbook here, especially with the big lead going into the half. You know, I was just wondering if Cal was really showing us all that they're going to show us in Pac-12 play. So I don't want to say I read too much into it. I mean, I think it's certainly a good point. I wanted to see the way they were going to work in some of the young receivers. I mean, I'm really excited to see this Robertson kid. Didn't see too much of him, certainly, in the first half when the game was competitive. But I think the biggest takeaway for me is this Hawaii team is going to be epically bad, and if you look at their schedule and all of the traveling they have to do, including a noon game in Michigan this coming Saturday, where I believe they're a 40-point underdog, I mean, this is just a team I can't imagine backing unless we see dramatic improvement. Cal's going to be an interesting team, though. We'll see. A lot of folks are downgrading them because of how much they lost on offense, but you know, there's something to be said about that Bear Raid offense and believing in Sonny Dykes, and Davis Webb, I think, is going to be a really good fit for them.
Cal's tackling in space was terrible. So when they play a team that's going to put them out in space and really spread them out here in the Pac-12, and there are plenty of teams that will do that, Cal's going to give up some serious points this year. You were right about that number. It's 40. That's going to be a bloodbath in Ann Arbor on Saturday. I think Harbaugh can name the score in that game if he wants to. I don't know how much he's going to run it up on them, but that is just – that's going to be one where you want to hide the wife and kids for sure.
Yeah, that's I believe a noon game, and I will, my television, of course, I'll have many televisions on, but the Houston Oklahoma game seems like that's a far safer game to watch at noon on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. Western Michigan Northwestern is going to be a fun one too. That's definitely going to be one to keep an eye on. Of course, I have Ohio State going on at that time, so you know I'll be watching that one. I'm going to wish I had four or five TVs. It's going to be one of those Saturdays where you're going to want to watch as much as you possibly can. Let's talk about a couple of these wildcard teams here in the Pac-12. Let's begin with Washington, because Washington, a team that, you know, you and I talked about this at the end of last season. I talked about it with Kyle Kensing. I talked about it with Kyle Hunter. You know, all of us wanted to really be able to buy into this Washington team this year. And the hype train is just off the rails. I mean, if Ozzie Osbourne was still relevant and coherent, he'd probably have written a Crazy Train remake about the Huskies this year. You know, what do you do with this team now?
Well, yeah, I agree that the hype is out of control, and I do feel like we had a pretty good read on this team last year. I mean, they were definitely a bet-on team late in the year as well as in the bowl game. But this is one of those teams where the metrics and the talking heads are aligned, and really everyone has come out and pegged Washington to win the Pac-12. So, you know, I like to zag when everyone else is zigging, and to me, to just put this team automatically at the top of the Pac-12 doesn't make any sense. I mean, yeah, logically, this team should improve upon their 7-6 record last year, given that these kids are going to be a year older, but you're still talking about a lot of sophomores. And I think the most interesting thing to me is I call them a wild card because I feel like they could go 9-3 and they'll be considered a disappointment. I think that this is still a relatively young team. I could see them underperforming in a few big spots, but I could also see them absolutely crushing a couple of teams where the games were thought to be competitive. So I think this team could go in a lot of different directions, but I just don't see them at 11-1 yet. I think that the hype train has just gone too far. They're a very exciting team. I mean, I love the pieces they have at the skill position, particularly with Browning and Gaskin. But, man, I just think that based on what we saw last year, it was encouraging. But to make that big of a leap in year two with so many sophomores seems a little far-fetched from my point of view.
I think the best thing that we can hope for here with Washington is that they just carpet bomb Rutgers, Idaho, and Portland State in those first three games. Just hang huge numbers. I'm talking 50-plus points in each one of those games if they can. I mean, Rutgers may keep it a little bit closer than that. Idaho and Portland State, you know, maybe not so much. But then at Arizona, Stanford at home, at Oregon, you know, hopefully between the hype train and maybe a really, you know, encouraging non-conference slate, maybe we get a chance to go against Washington there early on, particularly what could be a tricky spot, you know, going down there to Tucson to take on Arizona.
Well, you know, Adam, I'm glad you raised that because actually their week one game is where my pure power ratings actually have that closer to a 3-touchdown game than a 4-touchdown game. I believe right now Washington is a 26-point favorite over Rutgers, and I think there may be some value. Now, I may not end up playing that because I think Rutgers is going to be terrible, maybe the worst team in the Big Ten, and I, you know, that long trip out to the West Coast, that can affect your numbers. But I think that just even looking at that from a pure power rating standpoint suggests to me that Washington is going to be overvalued coming right out of the gate. And if they boat race a few of those teams, I totally agree. I'm not big on Arizona this year, but that home game against Stanford, boy, that could be a really big spot to back the Cardinal against Washington if Washington comes out of the gate 4-0. I think there could be some value playing against this team as long as it starts hot. Couldn't agree more.
Well, let's go over to the Pac-12 South here and talk about a couple of these teams, beginning with Utah. Kyle Whittingham, great head coach, maybe a top 15, top 20 guy in the country. I give him a ton of credit. I give him the benefit of the doubt almost year after year. Of course, going to Utah, a very, very tough place to play in Salt Lake City, particularly for a lot of these California schools. And, of course, you got the Northern Washington schools where it doesn't get all that cold, but in November and December in Utah, it's pretty cold. So, the thing about Utah this year, though, they've lost a ton on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and I think that is why I'm sort of referring to them as a wild card. I mean, I've sort of learned over the years to, betting against Kyle Whittingham is not necessarily a great proposition, particularly how well they perform defensively year in and year out. But you're right. Major pieces in the offense are gone, Booker being maybe the most relevant. I mean, I do like the fact that they can bring in Joe Williams, who got some time with Booker hurt. But this was an offense that wasn't really efficient last year. And they were really plotting. It's part of the reason the numbers didn't really like them as much as the human pollsters. Utah was in the top five for a while, and the metrics certainly had a more like a top 20 team. So, yeah, I think that there's some big question marks. But I think that, betting against Utah, not necessarily a great idea, particularly Utah at home. They get a couple big games this year. I think that, as the season goes on, this team may become a bit of a bet-on team. But I think that you're right in that the returning production scares me a little bit. But I think it's going to be a team to keep an eye on, particularly as the year goes on.
The thing that's hard about Utah, I mean, they lose Booker, they lose Travis Wilson, and also Kendall Thompson. They lose their top three pass catchers, Booker included in that group there. So they lose a lot of skill position players. And, of course, they lose some guys both on the defensive line and also particularly in the linebacker core where they lost their top two tacklers. But the thing about Kyle Whittingham's teams, they almost always win the line of scrimmage, and that's what makes them dangerous. And that's why they can, sometimes reload these skill positions, is that, the backs have holes and the quarterback has time to throw. So that makes Utah a really, really difficult handicap, like you were saying. And I think they're probably a team I'll largely stay away from, unless I catch them in a really favorable spot, like catching points at home, like you said.
Well, and Utah's been a good team to bet on when they've gone against teams that are known to be a little bit more finesse, I'll say, just to be polite. I mean, UCLA and Oregon, I mean, they've come out and punched those teams in the mouth. And so I think you're right. I think that they're in the trenches. They're going to be very solid. I do think from a skill position standpoint, they're interesting because they get a couple of guys back off injury, Tim Patrick, who missed all 2015, and then they get this Troy McCormick back, who, he's explosive, small guy. And so I think, getting a couple guys back off injuries, which aren't reflected in those returning starters numbers, they may not be as bad as we think. Of course, the quarterback position, we'll see what they do there. But I think that where I really like to look at Utah is where they get matched up against teams that are known for not being very tough, tend to be, sort of Pac-12 soft, and there may be some advantage there. But that's why they're a wild card team for me. I'm not rushing out to bet their season win total over by any stretch, but they'll be a week-to-week team that I'll look at to see if there's value. I'm guessing that they're going to be more value in playing them rather than playing against them.
One more team to touch on here, staying in the Pac-12 South, that's USC. UCLA kind of, I don't want to say they're being handed the South Division, but UCLA, it does seem like they have the highest ceiling and the highest upside. However, Southern Cal brings back everybody on offense except for starting quarterback Cody Kessler. They'll go with Max Brown here. We'll see how he fares. We'll also see how long his leash is. But I think another big question for USC is Clay Helton. Clay Helton gets the full-time job here, and things aren't going to change a whole lot offensively. And then on the defensive side, we'll have to see how things play out here with Clancy Pendergast. But again, I mean, USC is one of these programs that recruits itself in terms of, five-year recruiting rankings. They've got to be up there in the top 10 easily with all the talent that they pull. they just haven't been able to put it all together here over the last few years.
Yeah, there'll be one of these years where USC will actually live up to the hype. And in fact, over the last few years, I've very happily played their season total win over under because they've gotten so much hype. But I think that this, you know, the situation with Helton has kept expectations for this team depressed, as well as their schedule. I mean, they have to have, and I don't have it in front of me, but I'm guessing that no matter what metric system you look at, they must have a top five toughest schedule in the country. Now, Max Brown, you know, a highly recruited guy, has waited his turn, has been in the system for a while. I don't really have a lot of questions about what they can do offensively. I think that the questions for me are on the defensive side of the ball, where in the trenches they've had a hard time keeping you know, that too deep stocked with guys because of the sanction. You know, Teddy Pendergrass has a track record here, but I feel like if there's some uncertainty from my standpoint, it's what they're able to do on the defensive side of the ball. Look, they have athletes and talent everywhere. And again, I think at some point it's all going to come together, but Clay Helton's going to have to show me something before I run to back this team, certainly from a season win total perspective.
According to Phil Steele, this is the toughest schedule in the country. That's not a surprise. They open with Alabama, of course, on this huge weekend coming up. They go to Stanford. They're at Utah on a short week right after that. They've got to play at Washington, at UCLA. They finish up the regular season with Notre Dame there on Thanksgiving weekend. So for USC, it's definitely a loaded schedule to be sure. And, you know, look, talent can only take you so far. You know, we need coaches that can maximize that talent. And again, the jury's still out in my mind on Clay Helton. So Aaron's Pac-12 season win total piece will be going up here shortly after the show at bangthebook.com. Make sure that you check that out. You also contribute to numberfire.com. What's in the pipeline here as we finally get a full slate of college football this weekend?
Well, the one thing that you and I haven't done a lot of is really talk about specifically some week one line. So I think I'm going to do a best bets column. You know, maybe I will do that for Number Fire, but I'm going to take a look at a few of the games that I like the best. And what I'll try to do is look at a few of the mainstream games where I think there may be some value, but then also do a deep dive into one of the smaller conferences. I think you hit on one of the games that I really, really like, which is Western Michigan getting those 6 points. So I'll look at a few games where I think that the numbers and the metrics suggest some value. And then, of course, we're going to wrap up the season win total preview series with the SEC. I do think that that's a fascinating conference, and I think that there, from a futures perspective, two teams in the West, just to give you a little bit of a tease, two teams in the West, not named LSU and Alabama, that may be worth playing to win the conference. So I'm going to be working on those pieces this week, and couldn't be more excited for the Thursday kickoffs.
Well, and hopefully if we can, we'll try to get Aaron Saunders back on the show here to talk about the SEC and then maybe also work in some stuff on those week one lines. We'll play it by ear. Check out your schedule, see if it lines up. But Aaron Saunders, bangthebook.com, also numberfire.com, at Saunders Sports on Twitter. Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll talk to you again this week.
Yep. Take care, Adam. Thanks.
Great stuff there. Really, really strong look at the Pac-12, a fascinating conference to be sure. Conference with a lot of parity. And, of course, that bold call there from Aaron about Oregon possibly being one of the final four teams. So we'll stick with the college football theme. Bring in Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going good, man. Things have been really busy around here, but it's I'm really excited about college football season being here. And, you know, I don't consider last week's game the real start of college football season, so we're going to say that this Thursday is the beginning of college football season. Been on a really nice run here lately. I've actually won my last 8 plays overall in baseball, so it's nice to be able to build up the bankroll and help clients build up the bankroll some to start the football season off.
Did you get a chance to watch that Cal-Hawaii game?
I watched some of that game, and, you know, it was one of those things where I watched a little bit of that game, and I kind of got tired of the ugly football.
It was – ugly is a good word for it. It was a debacle. I mean, there were 82 points in that game, but that was not a good football game at all, which, I mean,
No. That's
probably what we expected anyway, with it being in Australia, first game of the year, all that. But not a whole lot of refinement, that's for sure. And, you know, that kind of brings up a whole other point here is in week one here, you know, we have this idea in our minds of what these teams are going to be, and we have this idea in our power ratings of what these teams are going to be. And then you get to week one, and – maybe it doesn't look that way. You know, these teams are – there's so much turnover, as we talked about, whether it's players or coaches. You know, there's a lot of miscommunication going on here in week one. Do you tend, as a result, to kind of limit your exposure over the first week or two of the season, or do you feel like, you know, this is the time where you feel you've got the best edge because you've done all that preseason homework?
Yeah, I think you usually early in the season, I really like the edge that I have. I play more totals than I do sides just because I feel like that's my biggest strength. But, you know, I feel like if you put in a lot of time over the off season, you have to try to get the biggest edge you possibly can. And, you know, once everybody starts figuring out the odds makers, they figure out these teams pretty quick. And, you know, by the middle of the season, if you haven't adjusted, you know, you're not going to have the same kind of edge that you had early in the season. So, you know, in general, I think if you go back and look over the seasons, you know, I haven't looked at this really closely myself, but I think I probably have done the best in the first half of the season. And then I usually do well in bowl season as well. But, you know, I think that early in the season is a good time to try to play it if you've been doing your homework. I do think that that also brings up a good point that we've talked about in the past, that, you know, week one, it's really easy to overreact to what you see in week one. If you really feel like you've done your homework on a team and know that team really well, you don't want to overreact to one game because, you know, everybody has a bad game. These are college kids. You don't know what they're going to do in the first game of the season. You know, these teams that look pretty bad in the first game could end up being pretty decent teams. Now, I'm not saying Cal and Hawaii are going to be decent teams because I really don't think those teams are any good. The tackling in that game, by the way, just awful, awful tackling. You know, I think that in general, though, when you watch week one games, remember that, you know, if things look a little bit ugly, you know, a lot of penalties, things like that, you know, they'll probably get cleaned up. I wouldn't downgrade a team too much for things like that. But, you know, I'd try to give it a little bit of time before you adjust too much.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget back in 2014 when Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech 35-21, a Virginia Tech team that went 7-6 in week two. You know, Ohio State, of course, went on and won the national championship. So, you know, yeah, you can live with that bad performance there early on in the season. You mentioned it already. You know, a lot of people like to overreact to week one. Weeks two and three are my favorite 2 weeks to handicap college football because that's when you see all the overreactions from the odds makers and also from the betting market. And, you know, those are 2 weeks where you can really pick off a lot of good things. And like you, you know, I've always been a guy that's had more success early in the year, late in the year, and the middle of the year is where it gets tough when the lines get tighter. You know, you got more of those situational spots where teams are playing all these conference games and, you know, difficult spots. So definitely, you know, I do think that you can strike early on in the season. Now, at the same time, you know, I know everyone's excited to have college football back, but bankroll management critical at all points of the year, but particularly here this week as well, because you dig a big hole, you know, then you got to climb out of it, or you don't want to have to reload early on in the season. So, you know, in terms of your approach to managing a bankroll early on in the year, you know, maybe a percentage per game thing or whatever, however you want to word it, you know, what would be your advice here early on?
Well, I mean, I'm always very cautious with bankroll management. I think, you know, way too many people when it comes to betting on games bet too much as compared to what they should be. You know, I don't like to bet more than 3 or 4% of my bankroll on a game. You know, 5% is a lot for me. You know, this is something where I think that, you know, you have to be prepared. You know, with a guy like me, you know, I play a lot of games and things like college football, college basketball. Obviously, college football is only once a week or, you know, there's some weekday games, but in general, once a week. So it's not the same as college basketball with having a bunch of plays every day. But there still can be a lot of things happen. You know, if you have 11 plays on a Saturday or something like that, you know, you're going to have some really good Saturdays. You're going to have some really bad Saturdays. So more than anything else, you know, I would suggest not over betting, you know, doing more than what you really can handle because everybody's going to have a bad day. You know, I've said this so many times, but, you know, I have a lot of people who judge me based on one day's returns, and I feel like that's not really a fair way to do it. I don't think that's fair for anybody. So, you know, even if you're just doing this on your own, don't think that you're good at it if you have one really good day or that you're bad at it if you have one really bad day. It's something that you need to be careful with bankroll management from the start. And like I said, you know, I really think that going more than 5% of your bankroll at any one time is too much.
No, I completely agree. And like you said, this is a long-term business. This is hardly a get-rich-quick scheme. Before we get into the four games I want to talk about here, a couple of things I want to mention. For one thing, Kyle, obviously, if you need to go, you know, just either hang up or let me know that you got to take off. I know with your situation, you know, timing is everything here, so we'll see how that plays out. The other thing, I've contributed three previews over to huntersportspicks.com, Kyle's website, and then I'll be doing several college football previews here for bangthebook.com this week. So make sure that you go and check those out. But I want to start with a Thursday night tilt here. Appalachian State and Tennessee. We've seen Appalachian State money come in, push this number down through 21. Now, you talk about key numbers, you're talking 3, 4, 6, 7, that type of thing. 13, 14, if you really want to extend it that far. To an extent, 21 is sort of a key number in the sense that, you know, you score by threes and sevens here in football, but not that key of a number. However, I think it's a significant move to see Appalachian State coming down, particularly with a Tennessee team that's got a lot of hype coming into the year.
Yeah. First of all, I have to say that before I came on here today, I got a little talk by my wife that, you know, if anything happens, I better get off the phone right away. So definitely will hang up. And if I'm gone really quickly, you'll know what happened. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about college football here in Appalachian State and Tennessee. I have to say, I think of the games we're going to talk about today, I probably have the least opinion on this game. One thing that I already told Adam that I'd like to do here throughout the course of the season is, I have the market data percentages as far as how much the spread's being bet each way. Have more access to that this year. I'm going to try to give that out in certain spots this year. I wanted to say that I think it's really interesting. You've got 85% of the bets so far on Tennessee, but the number has gone down from 22.5 to 20 or 20.5. Definitely interesting. To me, it is very interesting that Tennessee is – they're hyped. I mean, last year they were really hyped as well. I have to say that Tennessee is one of these teams – I know it might sound a little bit funny, but I respect Tennessee, but I'm really reluctant to trust them. Now Tennessee is ranked 8th in my power ranking, so obviously I think Tennessee is good. But, you know, Butch Jones, that coaching staff, do I really think they're that good? I don't know. You know, they've lost a lot of close games in the past. You're going to have to show me before I go betting on Tennessee. Appalachian State, to me, they're stepping way up in class. The key for Appalachian State is, can they throw the football? Last year they were 9-for-28 passing against Clemson. If you can't throw the ball at all against Tennessee, Appalachian State's not going to be able to just run it down their throat. So they've got to be able to throw the football some. Appalachian State's a really good Sun Belt team. They're going to duke it out with Arkansas State for the Sun Belt crown. But obviously a huge step up in class from the Sun Belt to the SEC. You know, I think Appalachian State is a team that has a really good defense for Sun Belt. They're going to be heavily tested by Tennessee, obviously. I think their key on defense is to be able to stop the run. I think Tennessee will be able to run it quite a bit here. To be totally honest with you, I think this line is very good at the current level of 20 or 20.5. So I don't really have any strong lean here. What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for Appalachian State because, as you said, they have to throw the football. Because when you take on a team in the SEC like Tennessee, it's probably going to take Marcus Cox out of the equation. Marcus Cox, one of the best running backs in the country that nobody really talks about because he's buried down there in the Sun Belt in Boone, North Carolina. But he's a tremendous rusher, over 1,400 yards last year. The problem is, how much of a push does Appalachian State get up front? That's what I would be worried about here in this game. And if they don't get a big push, makes Taylor Lamb have to throw the football. And he's a decent quarterback for the level that he's at, the conference he's in, but probably doesn't match up well in the SEC. So I understand why sharp money is coming in on Appalachian State. You know, they are a very, very good Sun Belt team. And, you know, you try to play against that early season perception of Tennessee. Maybe they come in a little bit fat and happy. Maybe they're just worried about getting through this non-conference slate unscathed. So this is kind of one of those win and get out types of games. But I have a hard time backing Appalachian State here, particularly short of the 21 points. If you're getting 21.5, 22, where the number was, then there's some line value there potentially, but that's the big thing is if Appalachian State's best player is taken out of the equation, it's tough for them to compete.
Yeah, it is. And I think if you like Appalachian State, there is still a good chance that it gets back to 21 or 21.5 because the public's going to be there a lot more later this week. Tennessee is going to get plenty of money. So it won't surprise me at all if it gets back to 21, 21.5. I'm not going to play anything on this game. I actually think the total is really sharp as well. So I think this was a sharp line from the odds makers. Like you, though, I'd be really hesitant to play a team like Appalachian State that's stepping up in class that much. I do think Appalachian State's going to have a good season, and you're definitely right. You know, Cox gives them a really good running game. Question mark on the quarterback when he's stepping up in class. And, you know, Tennessee, like I said, I really do respect them. I think they have a very high upside, but I'm reluctant to trust them, so I'm going to sit out and see what I see.
Well, we picked a real variety of games here for the four that we're going to talk about. And, of course, you know, you can find all kinds of free pick write-ups. Like I said, we'll have some at Bang the Book, and then there's some over at Kyle's site, huntersportspicks.com as well. But Friday night, Army takes on Temple. And this is a really fascinating game to me. We've seen some line movement come in on the Black Knights here for this one. Army was 2-10 last year, just 5-5-2 against the spread. Temple, 10-4, one of the best seasons in program history, 9-5 against the number. Did lose to Toledo in their bowl game, although they had higher aspirations than the Boca Raton Bowl. So what are your thoughts on this game?
Well, first of all, the bets are 50-50 as far as the amount of bets on this game. The money is 69% on Army. So definitely a sharp play here on Army so far. It's been all sharps moving this line. And, you know, I think that's the case in most of these spots because the public's not too involved yet. So if we see line moves, it's probably a sharp move. I have to say, you know, when you look at Army, they were 2-10 last year. They had 7 losses by 7 points or less. This is an Army team that was a lot closer than they looked like they were last year. I mean, I can remember watching that Army-Navy game at the end of last year. Army had a real shot in that game, probably should have won that game. You know, I think Army, if you look at their peripherals last year, their defense was quite a bit improved, 376 total yards allowed instead of 431 from the year before. They bring back 9 people on defense, 7 on offense. Now, their quarterback, Ahmad Bradshaw, had been reported to have left the team, and then he was back with the team, and it sounds like there's a good chance he'll start for this game. So Army, you know, maybe a little bit of disarray there on offense. You know, it's hard to say why they're, you know, he left the practice one day and then came back. But, you know, I think he's a pretty good quarterback for this system. I know that, you know, Army doesn't throw the ball very much, but Edgar Poe's a pretty good wideout. And reports are that Army wants to throw it a little bit more this year. You know, I'll have to see it before I believe they're going to be throwing it around very much. You know, Army's a tough team to beat by a lot of points because they run the football so well, they run it so often. That uses up the clock. I mean, Army is always at the bottom of the pack when it comes to tempo. And, you know, whether it be in college basketball or college football, that's something that I look at very closely. And, you know, when you're laying 16 points against a team like Army that controls the football for so long, first of all, I'll say obviously I liked this a lot better before it was under 17, which is a pretty important number. But you know, certainly the side that I would take here if I was taking a side is Army. Because Temple, you know, I don't really trust them to cover a big number. Their offense really wasn't that good last year. I think their defense is still good this year. But, you know, they shouldn't be as good as last year. Matakevich was such a big player for that team. And, you know, like I said, Temple, not really a team that's very good at covering a big number with offensive output. The one thing I will say is Matt Rhule is a really good coach. That gives me a little bit of pause here. I think that he's probably still underrated by most people. But in general, you know, you give me a game with this low of a total and give me this many points for the team that runs the football as well as Army does, then I'm always going to be leaning toward the underdog.
I think it's really interesting here that, you know, I mean, Temple did play Navy in 2014, but second straight year here in the American Athletic Conference that they don't see Navy during conference play, which is pretty surprising to me, which would have given them, of course, another chance to look at a triple option offense. But you brought up a really key point there is, you know, this total opened around 51 at Bookmaker. It's down to 46.5. And, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot of plays in this game. Both teams fairly slow on offense. Temple not particularly. You know, I mean, they don't light up the scoreboard offensively. So that's the question you have to ask yourself is, you know, how many points does Army actually need to score to cover this number when they're catching 16? That's something I like to do here in these games where you got big favorites and low totals. I mean, obviously the initial inclination is to take the team catching points. So I see why this one's pushed down through 17. And, you know, for Army, like you said, I mean, some bad luck last year, minus 11 in turnover margin. And that's not really something that happens a whole lot with Army. I mean, they do fumble the ball with this triple option, but it's not like they throw a lot of picks or anything like that. So you have to figure that number regresses a little bit. I think Army may be a play-on team for a decent part of the year this year.
Yeah, you know, I think Army's better than most people realize. And I think Temple takes a step back this year. Maybe not a huge step back, but, you know, I think perception on Temple could be a little bit too high from the public based on what they did last year. I think it's going to be interesting to see what the public comes in on this one. But like I said, you know, my lean here is Army. I would have liked the under if I had gotten the early number, but I think 46.5 is pretty good now. So, you know, in general, though, Army catching that many points this year, I think, would be my lean, because I do think Army has a good chance to win maybe 5 or 6 games this year.
Well, with a large group of handicappers coming on the show this week, we're going to try to cover all of these marquee games coming up here on Saturday, and we know that there are a ton of them. We'll cover a couple of them here with Kyle, beginning with the 3:30 kickoff between UCLA and Texas A&M. Big test here for the Bruins going on the road to College Station. Of course, with the 12th man, I believe it's now the biggest by capacity stadium in college football with some of the renovations they've made over the last couple of years. A&M laying 3 at home. BetOnline actually gone up to 3.5. The first ones to push through that key number here. What's your take on this one?
Well, first of all, I wanted to ask you, I mean, are you surprised about this line move?
No, I don't think so. Just because, I mean, early in the season, it's really tough to go out there and face one of these up-tempo, high-octane offenses. I think that's kind of the worry for the Bruins here.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that surprises me a little bit about the line move, especially to get to 3.5 BetOnline, it's just that Texas A&M had such a rough offseason. It surprises me that everybody's piling in on Texas A&M. I will say that I have a play on the total in this game, so I'm not going to talk about the total. The side, 58% of the bets so far on Texas A&M, and there are a lot of bets on this game. When I was talking about the numbers on the other games, we're talking about a small number of bets. Now, this game's got several thousand bets, so Texas A&M, 58% of the bets, 81% of the money. So, I mean, you could say that this is certainly a sharp move as well. It does surprise me somewhat. You know, I think it may be more about UCLA and not trusting UCLA than it is about backing Texas A&M. You know, we've talked about UCLA in the past, and you know, I think Jim Mora has a lot to prove as far as being able to upgrade his talent. He's a very good recruiter. But from the first game to the last game, he hasn't proven that he does a really good job, you know, moving those guys forward. You feel like, you know, you get these guys in there that are freshmen and they look like really good players. And then by the time they're seniors, they're about the same player they were before. You know, I think of a guy like Brett Hundley in that situation. So, you know, I think UCLA has plenty to prove. UCLA lost quite a bit as well. You know, if you look at both of these teams, I think both of these teams look quite a bit different from what they did last year. You know, UCLA lost Paul Perkins, very key part of their offense. If you look at what UCLA is going to do this year, more of a pro-style offense, looking to throw the ball downfield for Josh Rosen. You know, Rosen's a good player. I just wonder if the talent around him is good enough now. And I'm not sure about that. I mean, he lost his top 2 wide receivers, 4 of his top 5 pass catchers from last year, and his running back. So I think UCLA's defense is good. I mean, they returned 9 starters on defense. I know Miles Jack is gone, but they had a lot of guys hurt on defense last year, UCLA did. I think UCLA's defense is going to be better than it was a year ago. You know, I don't know how much I trust Texas A&M either, though. I mean, they obviously have a lot of question marks. A lot of things went on in the offseason for them. You know, this is another game that I don't have a strong opinion on as far as the side. You know, I think if you get more than 3, I'd start wanting to lean toward UCLA and grabbing the points. You know, Trevor Knight, I mean, what do I think of him? I think he's unproven. You know, he has to show me that he's going to be good in this offense. I know he's a dual-threat guy. But, you know, one really good game doesn't tell me a whole lot about somebody. So, to me, I want to wait and see how he does in this offense.
That's the big thing with Trevor Knight is the only game anybody ever remembers by him is that game that he had against Alabama. And that was a game where, I mean, Alabama's a great team, but they had no interest whatsoever in being there. And
right.
I don't want to discredit what Trevor Knight did against, you know, some Sunday players on that Crimson Tide defense. But, you know, yeah, he's got to prove it. I mean, Keith Ford, transfer from Oklahoma, you know, I mean, he's a guy that could be a very good running back for this team, and they do need to replace Trey Carson, who ran for over 1,100 yards. A couple things I think are driving this line move. For one, Texas A&M's offensive coordinator is now Noel Mazzoni, who was the offensive coordinator at UCLA. So the theory here is that Mazzoni knows the personnel at UCLA, particularly the unproven guys that Rosen's going to be giving the ball to. So that's pretty big.
Right.
The other thing is I think people are really believing in this defense with John Chavis at the helm. I mean, John Chavis, a guy that came in last year, A&M only gave up 22 points per game. Now, they got gashed on the ground, but their pass defense was fantastic. They bring back most of the secondary, most of the back seven. Myles Garrett's the best player on the field. They've got him. So I think there's a lot of reasons, and a lot of compelling reasons to take Texas A&M in this spot. It sucks to not get 2 or 2.5. I think at 3, it's still playable. At 3.5, you kind of start to worry about that a little bit. But, you know, I do think Texas A&M's a decent side here. I know they had a tumultuous offseason, to be sure, but maybe getting between the lines will kind of help them level off a little bit.
Well, I mean, I agree with you about Chavis. I mean, he's a really good defensive coach. Texas A&M's defense took a pretty big step forward last year. I mean, 28.1 points per game allowed the year before, 22 points per game last year. Honestly, if their offense had been decent late in the year last year, they would have won a lot more games. So this is a Texas A&M defense that was holding up their end of the bargain. And in the past, that's not what the case has been. So, you know, honestly, I can't blame you for that, Lean. I'm not playing the side. There's no way I'd play this side at all. I think that Texas A&M's home field advantage, though, is definitely one of the best in the country. So obviously that's a good reason if you want to lay it with Texas A&M as well. You know, I think this should be a compelling game, and it's a game where we should be able to learn a lot about both of these teams.
And that's what I like here about this opening weekend. I mean, you know, not everybody's going to be in mid-season form, but, you know, a lot of measuring stick litmus test type games right away, you know, here in this particular spot. And one other thing I want to keep in mind here, it's going to be hot in Texas on Saturday. 92 degrees expected around kickoff. Going to be a little bit humid with some showers and thunderstorms in the area. Keep these weather situations in mind with these non-conference games as well, and that's kind of a spoiler for one of the previews I wrote up over at your site, where weather, you know, could play a fairly big role here in this non-conference portion of the season. One other game to get to. We got about 2.5 minutes left on the live stream. We'll go over by a couple of minutes here, so if you are listening live, please grab the archive version over at bangthebook.com. Should be up about a half hour, 45 minutes or so after the show. I love this game for a lot of different reasons. I think this may be my absolute favorite game of Saturday's card, which is a fairly bold statement to make given all the big games. But North Carolina and Georgia, two teams that people have a lot of questions about going into the year. This number open, North Carolina +4, sitting basically 2.5 everywhere in the market now. So the Tar Heels, bit of a sharp side for this opener in Atlanta.
Yeah, this is a really interesting game. I totally agree with you. I mean, this would probably be the game I'd watch if I was only going to want to watch one game. You know, obviously we'll see what happens as far as my situation, but I want to watch a lot more than one game. We'll see what I'm able to do, but this is a must-watch game in my opinion. You've got North Carolina coming off a really good season. This North Carolina team, you know, Marquise Williams is gone. That's the key here. Is what do you think of their ability to replace him with Trubisky? You know, I think that's the biggest key for North Carolina. Yeah, I'm a little bit torn on that because I think Trubisky's a good quarterback. I think he'll do fine in the system. I do think that some people can overstate how important those numbers are that he put up in garbage time. Those numbers that he put up were not against were not in those key winning spots. So I want to see him do it in a key situation before I assume he's just a great quarterback for this offense. I do think that North Carolina can move the ball here. Georgia lost several key players on defense. Kirby Smart's going to be a really good guy at the helm for Georgia. You know, I think that was a really good hire, and obviously he's a good defensive mind. So, you know, I don't think Georgia's defense is going to be weak by any means. You know, Georgia has a really good running game in general, and that is North Carolina's weakness. I mean, if you look at North Carolina's defense, they're really good against the pass. They're not good against the run. They're going to have to fix that this week, or they're going to get run on a lot, because, you know, I don't think Georgia's going to want to throw the ball very much in this one if they don't have to. So, in my opinion, my lean in this game is the over. I think 56, it's gone up a little bit. Obviously liked it more at 54.5. I kind of like the over in this game, though, because I feel like both offenses could have a lot of success here. And like I said, I think Trubisky can do a pretty good job here. Fedora, he's always been a good offensive coach. They move with a lot of tempo, in the top 20 or so in tempo in the country. So they're going to want to play fast. I don't think Georgia really wants to play fast, but Georgia could gash some pretty big running games against this North Carolina defense. So I think this is one of these games where you could see quite a few big plays.
Mitch Trubisky, the pride of Mentor High School, about 30 minutes east to the northeast, a little bit of downtown Cleveland. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about here on this show before is we talk about states and high school football and recruits. Ohio's probably their sixth, something like that, kind of in that second tier behind Texas, Florida, and California. So a lot of good talent to come out of the Buckeye State. I think Trubisky's a guy that can run this offense well. He's kind of been waiting and biding his time for a couple of years. One thing I do like about it is I think that if you're, you know, Larry Fedora and the offensive coaching staff here, Trubisky's not going to be as gifted of a runner as Marquise Williams. But what that does do is it gives you more opportunities to give Elijah Hood the ball, who I think is, you know, one of the most underrated running backs in the country. So Trubisky going to be able to sling it around a little bit more. You know, it does take away that dual threat nature that Williams had, so maybe it makes it a little bit easier for defenders. But that being said, Trubisky's probably going to be able to throw the deep ball a little bit more than Williams, so that could soften up the defense, could certainly soften up the Georgia defense, which is, you know, something that's kind of a question mark going into the year. You mentioned Kirby Smart. One of the things is that if you look at that Saban coaching tree, the coordinators haven't had as much success as you would expect in college football. So I think there's a little bit of pressure on Kirby Smart in that regard as well. Another concern for Georgia, you know, is Nick Chubb healthy? Is Sony Michel healthy? We don't really know yet. You know, we got to see those guys on the field to really see how that plays out. So I think that when you look at this game, North Carolina has fewer questions. I think Georgia, you know, of course, probably a more talented team, a little bit more in terms of top recruits, but you know, it's going to be a really fascinating one to watch, and I do want to see how Gene Chizik has this Tar Heels defense prepared, because there may not have been a more impactful coordinator hire prior to last season than Gene Chizik and what he did with this Tar Heels defense.
Oh, he did a great job with this defense, and you know, that was the big key to them having such a big season last year. Even though Marquise Williams was very good and got the hype that he did deserve, you know, it was the defense that was the biggest key to North Carolina taking that step forward. Like I said, you know, obviously their weaknesses against the run, they know what's coming in this game. So let's see if they can stop it. You know, if they can stop Georgia from running here, especially if Chubb's healthy, then this is one of those situations where you have to upgrade North Carolina some, because, you know, their weakness has been against the run. If they can stop the run here, it tells me a lot about the future. I think that this game may go to three. It looks like there's pretty heavily one-sided action on Georgia here lately. So I think this game may go to three. If it did, I think I would want to take North Carolina in this game. That would be my lean, at least. And like I said, I do lean to the over as well.
Well, a lot of really compelling games here. And, you know, I mean, you and I could have talked about this entire slate if we had the time to do that, because there's just so much intrigue, so many question marks in all of these different games. But do you have a radio show free pick for our listeners out there?
I do have a free pick. Let's go ahead and go with a Thursday game. I'm going to go with Indiana and FIU. I'm going to take the over in this game. Indiana and FIU over 61. Now, just a few quick thoughts about this game. Indiana was first in the nation in tempo last year. I don't think that's going to change as far as their tempo based on having a new quarterback. And I'd be really surprised if Indiana has trouble moving the ball against FIU. FIU, I think, could be an improved team this year, but I think where they improve the most is on offense. I think FIU has some pretty decent pieces on offense. If you look at Indiana, they lost their entire defensive line. Indiana's going to be a really bad defense. They've been a bad defense in the past. I think they're even worse this year. I think FIU can score plenty of points here. And I do think that this game could be back and forth quite a bit. 61, a fairly high total, but I don't think it's quite high enough for this game.
I actually just thought of one more thing that we need to do. We can't go through week one without doing the pick six format where I throw a bunch of off-the-wall games at you and make you think on your feet here. Can't believe I almost forgot that. I'm sorry. All right.
I have to say, I forgot about that too. Wow, we're a little bit we weren't ready there.
No, I guess we weren't, but we'll go ahead and get that going here. We'll start with Thursday night SEC matchup, South Carolina, Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt at home laying 3.5 in a game that's had a pretty significant line move since it opened. Game of the year lines or week one lines at South Point actually had South Carolina favored when it opened. So now Vanderbilt -3.5.
You know, I really don't like this game, and I know I say that quite a bit when you do the pick six. It brings back the memories of Ugh, you know, all those kind of thoughts. I was going to say, I think we were rusty forgetting about doing the pick six, but I guess I'm going to take Vanderbilt here. It looks like definitely the sharp side. I really don't like laying more than a field goal with them, but I don't trust South Carolina either. Just a very slight lean to Vanderbilt.
This has potential to be an incredibly ugly game. A total of 43.
Yeah.
Will Muschamp's defense should be on point here. The offense could be a completely different story. I'm going to take the 3.5 north of the key number just because I think that this is a game that truthfully could end in the mid-30s in terms of total points. Let's go to Kansas State and the Fighting Bill Snyders all the way out in Palo Alto to take on Stanford. Stanford's laying 15.5.
I guess I'll take the 15.5 here with Kansas State. You know, Bill Snyder really good at prepping his team. He's had a long time to get ready for this game. It's not a pretty bet to make, but I'm going to take the 15.5, and this is, again, not one that I love.
No, this is a really hard game to pick. I mean, you've got a new starting quarterback for Stanford. You've got Christian McCaffrey, who could run for 250 on just about anybody. I'm going to take Kansas State in the points here because I think David Shaw keeps this game really, really close to the vest. I think it's a very vanilla game plan for Stanford, so I think that this could be a little bit of a lower scoring game as well. Let's give you a good one here. Western Michigan +6 against Northwestern.
I'm definitely taking Western Michigan in this game. You know, this has been a game I've considered as a premium play. I was hoping to get 7. I don't think it's going to happen. Looks like it's been a sharp side here on Western Michigan already. I really like Western Michigan over the season win total of 8.5. And I think Western Michigan has plenty of pro talent. Northwestern has enough questions that I wouldn't want to be laying that many points with them. I think Northwestern's defense takes a little bit of a step back this year. And they don't have a good offense to be laying very many points at all against a team that should be able to score. So I'm going to take the points with Western Michigan. This is definitely my favorite one so far.
We've seen the total drop 4.5 points on this game from when it opened at Bookmaker from 56 to 51.5. You know, I mean, I would lean Western Michigan here because they've got more playmakers. But at the same time, I'm kind of worried about Group of Five teams that have a ton of hype coming in and playing these Power Conference schools because the Power Conference teams aren't going to sleep on them the way that they maybe normally would. So Northwestern should be motivated here to play this game, which is something that, you know, we sometimes don't see in these Power Five versus Group of Five matchups. Here's a nice ugly one for you. You know I like to throw in some ugly ones. Miami of Ohio +27.5 at Iowa.
Man, you did throw in an ugly one. Gosh. I don't even know what to say. This is not a game that I've handicapped very much at all. You know, it's hard for me to be speechless about college football, but you did it. I think that's what you were trying to do. So, well done here. Gosh, man, I guess I'll take Miami of Ohio. That's really ugly. I wish I could get the 28 points. First of all, I think the biggest key is that if you're watching college football this Saturday, just don't watch this game. You know, Miami of Ohio, a really, really not a very good team, although they have recruited better the last couple years. I have to assume they're going to be better than they've been. Iowa, not a team that I really like to lay 27.5 points against anybody. I mean, Iowa's a team that plays a very vanilla game. It looks like so far Miami of Ohio is the sharp side. Like I said, hate this game. I'll take Miami of Ohio.
That's the big thing for me is, you know, A, what is Iowa's motivation to go out here and blow away Miami of Ohio when they do have that rivalry game coming up next week? And B, you know, does C.J. Beathard throw the ball around the yard? I mean, Iowa is going to grind this thing out 4 or 5 yards at a time on the ground. Clock's going to be running. They just want to get out of here healthy. I think that gives some value a little bit to the dog here catching a very big number. So you know, we'll see. Miami of Ohio should be improved. I know Brad Powers, who's on the show, a lot higher on Miami of Ohio than a lot of people are. So, you know, I guess I'll go ahead and trust his expertise there on that one. A couple more games left to go here in the pick six. Here's a good one. Southern Miss, plus six against Kentucky.
I'll take Southern Miss here. You know, I don't trust Kentucky very much at all. I think they have a lot of question marks. I think Southern Miss is still going to be very good. New coach they bring in is going to stay with the same system, not change things up a lot. I think there are a lot less question marks about Southern Miss. In a game that I think should be very close, I'll grab the points.
Yeah, I'll take the points here as well. There's no reason to trust Kentucky yet. Southern Miss been a sharp side. This game opened north of seven. It's down to six now. I'm kind of curious to see where the public comes in, because it's SEC against Conference USA. Now, it is a Conference USA title game, you know, participant from last year, but still, I mean, you're talking about a very big conference disparity. So I want to see where this number goes. I'm actually more intrigued about that than the game itself. One more to throw at you, and in the pick six, I love to stay away from the marquee matchups. So we're going to go to one of the latest kicks of the night, Northern Illinois laying 10 at Wyoming.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting game that's under the radar. I think that Northern Illinois is not a team that I'd want to be laying very many points with right now. I think that Wyoming could certainly be improved. I wish I could get more than 10 points here, but I'm going to take the ugly home dog in Wyoming.
You know, what's the most intriguing about this game is the situation. You've got Northern Illinois going out to Laramie, highest elevation of any stadium in FBS. That's a really tough spot to play your first game. So for Northern Illinois, you know, they like to be up, do a lot of things offensively, spread you out, all that type of thing. The conditions may slow them down a little bit. I think Wyoming, there's a chance they could hang around here. Of course, there's also a chance that Wyoming loses 42-10. So, you know, a lot of possible outcomes there in that one, but I'd have to lean with the home dog in that one as well. So Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com. I know we went a little bit over there with the pick six. We'll try and budget our time a little bit better here in subsequent weeks. But what's going on over there at the website right now?
Yeah, just a few things here real quick. Still have the free pick newsletter at huntersportspicks.com. Just go over there and you'll get a free pick every week, 22-9, the last 31 free picks sent out by newsletter. Like I said, 8-0 in my last 8 premiums. So hopefully can keep the momentum going here in the beginning of football season. Follow me at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. And then also, the best special I have right now is the Football Fanatic Pass, and that's all college football and all NFL for $750. I know that sounds like a lot of money, but I went ahead and added it up. Last year, I had 252 plays, 181 in college football and 71 in the NFL. That means that would be $2.98 a pick. And when you consider that the average pick costs about $30 or $35, if you're looking for a value, it's certainly a better value than buying a pick individually. And the other big key there is that you get the pick as soon as I make it. So, you know, I usually get closing line value. So that's pretty important as well. And then, you know, I just wanted to note that I'm up 57.22 units in football in the last 5 years. So definitely been good in both college football and the NFL. I consider college football a bigger strength of mine, but really excited about the season.
Yeah, in the college game, both football and basketball, you're a high-volume player with those. So definitely worth the investment there. You're getting a lot of bang for your buck, to be sure. Kyle Hunter, at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. HunterSportsPicks.com is the website. Man, good luck with everything, and hopefully we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, thanks a lot, man. Good to be on.
Great stuff there with Kyle Hunter. I know the show running a little bit long here today, and you know what? Don't be surprised. That may be something that happens you know, throughout football season here, because we're just so excited about all the guests that we've got. Let's give you a little bit of a look ahead to the rest of the week here. We're going to have Brad Powers, bradpowersports.com, tomorrow's show. Wednesday, we'll have Wes Reynolds, also Jay Primetown. We'll see if that'll be an hour and a half show or if we'll do the 11:30 to 12:30 recording. I'll have to see what happens with, you know, Aaron Saunders' schedule. I've also reached out to Alex Nicholas for some Conference USA stuff. On Thursday, Tony George and Sports Cheetah, two professional handicappers, join us. We'll break down some more of those premier games with them. On Friday, we'll have Cole Ryan, hopefully Brent from DSI Sportsbook. I can't record on Thursday afternoon with him, so we'll see if we can come up with something that works for his schedule. If not, we unfortunately won't have Brent this week. I'm going to try everything I can to get that done. But if not, I'll talk some baseball on Friday, maybe give you some more thoughts on some of the line moves in college football, that type of thing. So, yeah, we'll have a full slate for you here on Bang the Book Radio as we get ready for the start of the college football season on Thursday. And then, of course, next week, the NFL starts. So we'll have plenty of stuff going on for that. So make sure you go over to bangthebook.com. I'll have my UFC Fight Night 93 preview going up here soon. Aaron Saunders' Pac-12 season win total piece. My MLB picks and analysis piece is also up over there. We're going to have college football previews, golf previews, motorsports previews, all kinds of stuff, soccer previews. We got everything going on over there for you right now at bangthebook.com. So head on over there, check all that out. Thank you very much for joining me, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.